Hi, this is Jimmy Slagle with Kitchen Conquered, where we believe that kitchens should know when they are conquered. And today I am excited and honored to have a true Kitchen Conquered chef with me today. Joining me today in the Kitchen Conquered virtual studio is veteran chef Keith Breedlove, Cutthroat Kitchen alum and owner of Culinary Kitchen. Hey, chef, welcome
Hello.
To Kitchen Conquered.
Thanks.
How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm cranking along and making this happen, and you know, never too many projects for a chef.
No kidding. There are so many topics that I want to dive into with you today, and we just don't have time. But I really want our Kitchen Conquered audience to get to know you and to get to know your story and pretty much where you're aiming your focus today. You ready to step into the fire?
Oh, heck yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it, brother. Fantastic. Let's start at the beginning, and let's talk about this amazing story arc that you've got going on. You know, with every story arc there's a where you were, where you are now, and where you're heading. And I know a lot about where you were, and I know a little bit about where you are, but I really want to talk more about where you're going, because we can't live in the past. We just got to forge forward into the fire. So what I want to do is I want to start with Cutthroat Kitchen, because as you know, the majority of our audience are home cooks who are trying to become better cooks, and a lot of them are reality cooking show fans, which means they dive into your life from the producer's point of view.
Yeah.
And we both know, from the producer's point of view, everything is kind of scripted out, for lack of a better word, to create drama and create conflict and to create those kinds of things. So what we want to talk a little bit about is your journey to Cutthroat Kitchen. How you got there, how you got selected to be on the show, what that experience was like for you, and then I want to dive into where you're at now and what's going forward with you. Okay?
Okay.
So let's go back to Cutthroat Kitchen for a minute.
All right.
The number one question everybody wants to know is, how did you get on that show?
Well, you know, I got on to Cutthroat Kitchen a little bit different than the average person. The average chef will apply through their website, and then you'll do a Skype. Then you'll do another interview, and then they'll select you. I had appeared on Guy's Grocery Games prior to being on Cutthroat Kitchen, and I just so happened that one of the producers that worked on Guy's Grocery Games ended up becoming one of the producers on Cutthroat Kitchen like a week after I filmed, and remembered me and said, you know, they had a Christmas special they were planning, and they wanted it to be really hard. And she said, well, you know, let's call Keith and see if he's interested. And sure enough, I mean, I went and did it. And I was lucky in that I got there through another venue. Somebody saw me, liked me, and wanted me to be on.
Well, I mean, whoever hasn't seen you is insane. I mean, you're everywhere. You got so much going on, and it's all so awesome. And I want to talk about all of it, but we just don't have time. So I want to ask you this, because you kind of came in through the back door on Cutthroat Kitchen. I mean, after being on Guy's show, you're one of those unique chefs, and we get to talk to so many unique chefs. But you're one of those unique chefs that is just your personality, man. It's just so gravitating, you know. And everybody wants to. I got to believe that every time you're out in public, people come running up to you and go, Chef, I feel like I've known you my whole life. You're my best friend, you know?
Yeah.
And I know from being in the celebrity perspective a little bit myself, there's a little bit of weirdness about that, yeah?
Because a lot of weirdness about that.
They've known you forever, and you don't know them.
Yeah, I've been a musician since I was 16, so my playing music has also always been a parallel. In my music career, never quite reached any stardom. I've played in a couple bands that put out albums and this and that.
Was that you I saw in the dirt?
No, just kidding. No, the actor that played me, no. I was there back in those days for some of those events, and it was pretty funny to see it in the dirt. One of the bands I played with, we toured L.A. quite often. It is weird because, you know, it's hard to miss me. One, I'm a very large and tattooed guy. But, you know, I also drive in a 28-foot truck that's got a skull and crossbones out of radish and carrots and a laser turret on the roof and a UFO on the roof. So it's really hard to miss me.
It is.
And I do that on purpose. You know, I try to make... I try to create memories with the food that we serve. So when you have a memory of a kid, you know, as a child, your favorite video games, your favorite comic books, your favorite sci-fi TV shows, that clicks you. And then when you get some amazingly well done, fresh, creative cuisine, it sticks with you. So we've really tried to tie the whole thing together. And I would say that influence comes from having spent a year with Guy Fieri. I was hired to run all of Guy Fieri's restaurants about 8 years ago. And I had to go in and reinvent a couple of them and reinvigorate them. So I got to see that side of the world too. I got to see his life and that. And to be honest with you, I did a few shows with him where I helped produce them and I did some of the food for him and that. I didn't want anything to do with TV. I was like, I can't believe it takes 13 hours to make a 30-minute show.
Right.
I don't want to do this. And then I also watched that, you know, his life and just he couldn't do anything normal really because he's so instantly recognizable. And I was like, okay, I'm good with this. But he's the one that pulled me into Grocery Games. I originally said no to him. And then his producer calls me and says, okay, so we have you set to be on this day. So we'll see you in Santa Rosa this day. So I guess I got suckered into it.
Right.
What was really cool though is Cutthroat Kitchen, and Guy's Grocery Games and the subsequent shows I've been on. I'm very lucky. I've done 9, well now 10 national food programs.
Right.
And the biggest thing is I do them to make myself a better cook. It has nothing to do with celebrity or anything like that. It's just more of the fact that I want challenge. I want the challenge. You get bored after a certain length of time cooking professionally, and I really wanted the challenge. So when I went into Cutthroat Kitchen, I said, I'm going to do this without spending a dime. My goal was I'll take every single sabotage thrown at me. I will do my best to be able to survive each one. And as you've seen, if you've seen the episode, I'm sure you have.
Yep.
I got some pretty freaking hard ones.
You did. But you rose to it like a champ, man.
And that's what they wanted, though, is they wanted that when we talked, I'm like, I told them that was my plan. You know, they're like, good, because we got some hard ones on this one because it was a Christmas episode. And, you know, and Philip was such a seasoned veteran on there. And, you know, after the first round, I'm like, I'm going to have a blast doing this. So I attacked it very intelligently, but it also helped me become a better cook because, you know, we take things for granted in our professional kitchen and not having some of those things and being able to think on your feet and go, okay, I can't do this, but I can do this.
Right.
I think the biggest, you know, being in a food truck for 7 years, at the time it was 3 years, really helped. I mean, because I've got to do that every single day. You know, like they asked me on the interview, feel that you have a advantage? I said, heck yeah, every single day is Cutthroat Kitchen, man.
Right, yeah.
I never know what's going to happen. You know, you show up, the brick and mortar, you show up, you pretty much know that your restaurant's not going to break down on the side of the freeway.
Right.
You pretty much know that your restaurant's not going to lose a tire. But you don't know that in a truck. In a truck, I've one of my best stories to tell of the food truck is we're on our way to a wedding, and our alternator died on the way to the wedding. So we're on the side of the road going, great, how are we going to get to this wedding? We got about Luckily, we always leave like 6-7 hours to get there and all that. And we had a couple, about an hour after work, like, you know what? I think I got it. Here's what we're going to do. So we turned on our generator, pointed it towards the fans in the back of the vents, turned the vents on, and then ran an extension cord from the generator to a battery charger that we put up in the engine next to the battery and made that our alternator and made it there.
Wow. Love the creativity, man.
You want to talk cutthroat?
Yeah, that's cutthroat. And that's, you know, and it's that creative thinking that makes you such an excellent chef in the kitchen, too. And, you know, you've got so much going on, and with the new restaurant being opened up, and what's your hard open date on that restaurant, on Culinary Kitchen? What's the hard date?
Oh, we're shooting for June 3rd.
June 3rd. So that's right around the corner, man.
Don't tell me.
Yeah, I know. Because I want to say to everybody that's listening right now, and everybody that will listen to the recording of this down the road, you know, of all the places that Chef Breedlove could be, he chose to be with us today. So give him some love in this. I mean, this is awesome that he's with us here today. So let's get back to this, because talking about Cutthroat Kitchen and talking about being on, you know, acting on your feet and being able to make those types of decisions and, you know, how does a home cook? Because that's our audience here. And you know, these are the folks that when they walk into their kitchen, they're like you. They're not going to lose a tire. Things are right where they're supposed to be. It's all cool. But one of the things that they want to do is be able to conquer any kitchen that they walk into. And that's what we really try to help them do over here at Kitchen Conquered. So how can you tell a home cook to get better at thinking on their feet? What's something they can do to improve their thought processes and quick fire skills, if you will?
You know, that actually ties into your question number 3 on yours, the constantly work to improve.
Right.
You know, the biggest thing is to read. Read cookbooks like they are like they're novels. You know, pick up a cookbook that that you find appealing and really read it. Read it cover to cover. Understand what it is that they're getting at, what the recipe is basically saying, because what's going to happen is after you read that, you may just remember the ingredients and go, oh, they did a halibut with soy sauce and butter, and it was this beautiful, you know, just get those basic flavor profiles in your head. You know, and the biggest thing to remember is there are only 20 ways to cook. That's it, 20 ways. And it's all about understanding the flavors and how things go together behind it that really make it complicated. When a lot of chefs go into something like Cutthroat Kitchen or Guy's Grocery Games or Chopped or any of the competition shows, unfortunately, the ones that lose go in with, this is what I want to do, this is what I have to have, and this is what I'm going to do when I get there. When you walk in your kitchen at home and you're going, you know, how do I say that? You go in with a preconceived notion, and if something's not there, it throws them off.
Right, yeah,
so
yeah, true.
It's really, truly best to start with your ingredients and move backwards. Go, okay, I have this, I have this, I have this. I have a pork, I have apples, I have onions. That's all I have. What do I do with it? Well, I know how to roast a pork. I know how to cut apples. So what if I blend a couple of these with a little cinnamon and then I get this great dish for pork? But understanding what your ingredients, and it sounds funny, but I said this in many, many interviews, let your ingredients tell you what they want to be. Too many times we go, this is what I want it to be, and we don't have the ingredients to fit that mold. The biggest way to get inspired to cook, especially as a home cook, as somebody who enjoys cooking, is to go to your local farmer's market and at least once a month and walk the market. And when you shop at the farmer's market, little secret, everything's going to work together. When I first walked into culinary school, a couple years ago, and when I actually, when I taught culinary school, I taught college for a while as well. My first thing I say is, okay, if it grows together, it goes together.
That's a great quote.
Let that be your guide. Let the farmer's market, that's what's really truly growing right now, be your guide. I think you'll find as a home cook, and it's funny, is that phrase is always so weird to me because I think we're all home cooks, but somebody that's not a professional cook,
right?
You know, professional cooks, people think, oh, you guys have all these great tools. You know, the job of a professional cook is to make the same dish exactly the same way hundreds of times. The home cooks and the passionate cooks that are cooking at home tend to be better and create a little bit better in their creativity and what they can do. You know, you're cooking at home for a very, very special market. You know, I cook for those who come and give me money, but at home I cook for those who I love.
Right.
You know, so there's going to be a difference. And you don't have to recreate that dish another 400 times.
You know, that is such in that 90-second dialogue, there was six amazing pieces of wisdom that I want to kind of unpack for just a second. And the first one I want to talk about is this: let your ingredients tell you what they want to be. That is so true. And with a lot of home cooks that we talk to, and even some professional chefs that I've had the unique opportunity to interview, they go in with the preconceived notion of, this is what I'm going to make, and regardless of what happens, I'm going to make this.
Yeah.
But when you walk into the kitchen and say, this is what I've got to work with, let's see what happens, it creates so much more opportunity. And then another thing that you said, what grows together goes together. I had an interview with another chef a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about seasonal dishes and you know, from farm to table and that kind of environment. And she brought up something that you just hit on again that is so true, that as a lot of home cooks, what they forget about is what's in season is what they should be focusing on at the moment.
Yes.
Because everything is fresh and everything is raw and it's just so good, and there's so much great food around, even in the U.S. I mean, even if we forget about all the stuff from other countries, if we just talk about what's in season in the U.S. at any given moment, there is so much opportunity to create and bring that art to life. And that's what I love about what you just said. It's just so true. And then another piece that I want to just kind of reiterate is, as a professional cook, creating the same dish over and over again, because that's what your audience, for lack of a better way to describe this, expects. They
Yep.
expect when they come into your restaurant and they order what's on the menu, it's going to taste like it did last time they were in there. And does that curtail some of your creativity a little bit, having to do that over and over again, or does that inspire you to create new menu items?
Well, you know, in a sense, both, because one, first off, that's what a cook's job is to take a dish that is beautiful and creative and flavorful and then recreate it multiple times. That's the job of a cook. A chef's job is to make sure that cook has the ingredients necessary, the training necessary, and the ability and the knowledge to prepare that dish multiple times. And there is a beauty sometimes, and I know because I do it every single day, in keeping that consistency. And that consistency is very much a strength, because your ingredients change year-round. And to be able to still make something flavorful, onions, tomatoes, or whatever, is a talent. And the techniques you use to make that same sauce is a talent, and you just get better at it. What drives me to create new things, and that's really my wife gets creative, is I just come up with weird ideas. I'll just be all of a sudden go, ooh, I want to do this. We've been working on a pancake menu for the restaurant,
I know. I want to talk about that in a little bit. Because there's some on there that I can't wait to get.
It's getting a little carried away. My wife laughs at me because she's like, are you going to need a second page for this? The thing is, you get excited. I get excited about new ingredients. I see something and I'm just like, wow, I really want to play. I want to play with that. I really want to do, like, I was at the farmer's market the other day, and one of the farmers I know handed me a bunch of rhubarb. I'm like, looked at it like, okay, what am I going to do with this? And then instead of saying, you know, oh, man, I can't. I don't know what to do with this. I'm always like, oh, we got to find a home. So I guess I got to make something new.
I've got it. I can't let it go to waste.
Yeah, and you really can't. I mean, there's things that you see constantly that you're just like, I have to use that. I have to play with that. I have to come up with something for that. And a lot of it is, will just drive you. It'll just, you know, push you to be better and push you to know more. And, you know, when you walk into the market and you see something you've never seen before, get it.
Oh, yeah. That's the joy of it, isn't it?
Oh, big time, man. I love it. I've come, one of my newest obsessions besides, you know, rhubarb and beets and is radishes. And then I'm also a big fan of, like, stuff people don't really ever hear about, like salsify and just different unique flavors, because you know what, you could come, there's a reason why people eat them, you might as well try it. And if you get an ingredient, you taste it, and it doesn't move you or anything, it's fine. You know, I hate onions, so every time I cook onions, I make them in a way that I'll actually like them.
Right, to conform to your palate.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. All right, so I know there's just so many things that I'd love to talk to you about, and I'm going to have to get you on 6 or 7 more times because we all just don't have enough time to dig into all the things that I want to talk about. So, but I want to get back on task with where we are for this particular segment, and that's getting you back into the kitchen for a moment, which is where
you have to warn you, I ramble like crazy.
I know. It's okay, but that's, man, I love it. I love it because that's where the wisdom comes from. You know, come from that you know, rehearsed speech. It comes from, let's talk about what I love, and I love will come out, you know? And that's why I love doing these interviews so much. All right, but I want to go back to getting you back into the kitchen for a minute, and I want you to focus on what you do for a living. And when it comes to that, this really helps our home cooks out a lot. So I want to ask you, what is that number one can't live without utensil? Now, you got to set knives aside, because everybody knows you can't cook without knives. So once the knives are in the kitchen, what is that next thing you've got to have?
But in my notes here, because I have to take notes because, you know, I do get distracted easily, I wrote down that I was thinking about this. I was like, what do I constantly need to have is tongs, a good pair of tongs. I like longer ones, not the super, super long. They're about 12 inches, heavy steel, good grip. They don't close at the end. I hate those things. You know the ones that have the little pull tab that holds them closed?
Yeah.
I think back as like back when I first started off and I was doing my apprenticeships and doing my stages, one of the older cooks, I used to leave my tongs on my station, and he came over and he goes, hey, put those in your pocket when you leave your station. Like put them in your back pocket or something, because those will walk away. Tongs are what everybody fights for. So over like 30 years now, anytime I'm working with other people or in other events or whatever, you'll know I say I have a pair of tongs in my back pocket. And it's because they are the most useful thing you will ever have in your kitchen.
I agree. I've got 3 pair that I constantly am fighting over.
Exactly. You know, it's like in the truck, I've got 12 pairs of tongs for the most amount of people ever work, and there are 2, because I never want to be without them. Biggest thing, you have to assume that everything you're going to grab is going to be hot.
Right.
You know, and it makes, it keeps your hands clean. You don't have to touch everything and wash your hands 1,000 times. But, you know, the biggest is just, you never know, man. Those things come in handy all the time. I have never come to a point where I'm in like, man, do you need any tongs? I always need them.
Always.
Those are the most thing, and almost equal to it, almost equal, is a good wooden spoon. Because, you know, metal spoons, depending on what you're making, can react with the pan and cause a discoloration. But wooden spoons, man, there's no substitute for a good, strong wooden spoon.
Is there a special, specific breed that you choose?
You know, I like the ones that are really sturdy. I've had people make me some, so I have a couple that are custom made.
Right.
But, you know, they have to be strong, and this is going to sound terrible. They have to be strong enough that they won't break if you have to swat somebody on the butt with it.
We had one of those in our house, and I can't remember what my mom called it, but it was certainly an attention getter.
Yeah. You know, on top of that, for the home cook, I always tell them to buy professional pans. You know, go to the restaurant supply store and buy those restaurant supply saute pans. Don't get the ones with the fancy names or Emerald Signature item or what. They're 9 out of 10 times those things are weak. They're too thin. Because they think that at home they want you to, you don't need the toughness of what we have on the restaurant. You know, you're not going to throw it across the room into a pan of dishes. But you know, Anthony Bourdain said it best about saute pans, is if you were to hit somebody in the head with the pan and there is any doubt what's going to bend first, the pan or the head, don't buy it.
The head or the pan?
Don't buy that pan, because your pan should be a lethal weapon.
So cast iron is the way to go then, yes?
Cast iron is the best. But, you know, there's also the Volrath saute pans. You see them in every restaurant. They were flat bottom somewhat at one time. They one time had a handle on them. Those really help distribute the heat better.
Right.
And cast iron is for searing anything. If you don't have a cast iron skillet in your house, you're not a cook.
No, I totally agree. I can't live without it.
No, I have quite a few of those. So, you know, okay, you asked for one. I think I gave you 4.
You did. You exceeded my expectations, as I would expect from you. Not only do you do it in the kitchen, you do it on the phone. Back into the kitchen. Technique. What is the one technique that you're constantly working to improve?
I actually had that one blank still because I can't pinpoint.
You know, when I ask that question to other chefs and they blank on it like you've done, they always come back with baking.
No, I'm a decent baker. I can bake to the level that I need. I think the biggest... You know, I'm always studying. I mean, it's not like one technique in general. It's like I have all of the modernist cuisine books, and I've cooked my way through 90% of the recipes that I was able to do. So that's probably about 50% of the recipes in it I've cooked my way through. There's never just one technique. I'm always learning. I'm always getting better. You know, I've lately been working on curing and pickling. I've been working on understanding sous vide cooking better. Just any technique that I come across where I feel like I'm not as knowledgeable in it as I want to be, not as I should be, because really it doesn't matter if I should be or not. I start studying and. Stuff just, you see something, you're like, what? I've got to learn more about that. And that was the one was pickling.
How's it going?
Oh, good. I love it. I've worked on different types of pickles. I've worked on, pickling is just an amazing technique.
So what's the weirdest thing you're going to pickle now that you stepped into that arena?
Weirdest thing it's funny because I've done it on like four shows, and one of them being grapes. I love pickled grapes.
Pickled grapes. Red or green?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. And they will blow your mind because you're going to be like, how the heck? Why would you pickle it? And I'm going to tell you, this is really a funny thing about it. My comment is always, it makes them grapier. It's like the flavor really comes out strong. I did it in grocery games, but I also did it when I did a Man vs. Child Chef Showdown on FYI. Right. I did these, and the judge, who's a chef, and we're both like, holy mackerel, man. This is amazing, because it really is a fun trick. I've pickled cherries, tomatoes. Right now, I've been making, instead of making pickles at everything else I do that's pickled, instead of making cucumber pickles,
right,
I've been making, I have to think about this for a second, squash pickles.
Squash.
I use squash. And the pickles that I get from using squash are 100 times better than the cucumber. I love them even more. So I learned a technique, or developed a technique, that make them more flavorful, made it easier to do, and made it a faster turnaround in terms of changing those up.
And what type of squash?
Just green.
Oh, okay.
Just zucchini.
Okay. Because I was thinking butternut.
You know, that would actually work. But one of the things I've done, though, is because I figured out how to do those really nicely, I have used the same trick to do other ones that are delicious and came out really good.
So are pickled grapes going to be on the menu at Culinary Kitchen?
Probably not yet. They'll get here.
Okay.
They'll get here.
All right.
One of the things we plan on doing as we move forward is we will be doing special dinners that, when we do the dinner, it's going to be like a themed dinner, and then we'll sell tickets to them so that I get to cook and fun different things like I wanted to.
We got to talk about that in much depth then, because there's another piece of this that I would love to talk to you about, but
sure,
we'll get to that in another call. Are you going to do them weekly, monthly?
Monthly.
When it strikes you? Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk more about that down the road. I want to talk about your favorite ingredient. What is your go-to ingredient, man? When you step into a kitchen and you look at what's available, and I know we were talking about let the food tell you what it wants to become, but when you walk into a kitchen, if you see a specific ingredient, you look at it and go, okay, I got this no matter what. What is that ingredient for you?
Pork. I love working with pork. You can do anything, depending on the cuts. Even when the cut, cut isn't really talking to you much, you can still look, there's anything, you can do anything with it. And there's so many things that we can do that, just unbelievable that you can do. I did a pilot for Food Network a few years back that was a time thing, and I think I made an entire pork dish in 7 minutes. Because that
pork
was...
Pork sushi?
No, I ground it. I ground it, okay. This show is Cutthroat Kitchen to the extreme.
All right.
The I'm trying to. It was a lot of fun. The concept is too long to explain. Basically, you only had a few minutes to do something of your own time frame. You know, you set how fast you get it done. But what I did is I ground the pork, and I cooked it in a waffle iron.
Interesting.
I put it in the waffle iron, cooked it for a little bit, lifted it, threw some egg and roasted onions, and what else did I put in there? Egg, roasted onions, and that was it. And then closed it again, and then flipped it out on a hamburger patty.
So we're talking pork waffles.
More, yeah, kind of. There's a Japanese dish that if I could remember the name of it, I would tell you. But that's kind of the way they do it, is you put the pork in the pan, then you top it with egg and onion and sometimes tofu, and then you flip it out onto the plate, and that pork is all beautifully caramelized, and all the juices are flowing down inside of it. So anytime it's like, what do you want to work with, I always ask people, well, just get me some pork, and then I'll dig through your coolers and figure out what it is we can do with it.
All right, well, man, I'm going to pull out the waffle iron tonight. I got some ground pork in the refrigerator. I'm doing pork waffles for dinner.
Dude, I'll tell you
no matter what they say.
I tell you what, you season that pork, put it in the – make sure you grease your waffle iron good, because you're going to get some of the fat out of the pork. But
right.
It cooks heck of fast, and it's really fun.
I'm going to try it. You've inspired me. All right, so let's go back to pork, because that's your favorite ingredient. Two questions. Number one, do you do your own butchering?
Yes.
Okay. Are you going to –
some subprimals from primals. I don't do whole hog.
Okay. And secondly, what's your signature pork dish? What is the one that, you know, you got to have from Chef Keith? What is that signature dish?
My son loves when I do smoked pork loin. I sous vide it and then smoke it. My wife loves pork belly.
Mmm.
Again, sous vide.
Always a favorite.
Yeah, I won't brine them for long. I rub it down and then sous vide it and then throw it in. I generally don't smoke it. I just slice it and sear it. Pork belly is so fun to work with.
Oh, yeah.
She would, if you ask my wife, she would tell you that what did I do with that one? It was a tobacco-smoked pork belly. With a maple glaze.
Now that's an interesting combination.
Yeah, we took I had sous vide the belly, and I had a bunch of cigars I had got when I was in Vegas for a convention thing, and they were dried out. So I lit them and put them in the smoker.
Wow.
And the smell and the flavor was unbelievable.
I can only imagine. We have to try that again. Try that again. I'll bring the cigars and
knock
it out. That does. That sounds great. And that and some pork waffles. I think we got a meal, man. Jeez.
Yeah, I love pork belly. I love working with it. I've been given some lamb belly to work with.
All right.
I've been working with some lamb belly as well. Like I said, you hand me a ingredient and say, you know, figure something out with it and give me an hour and I'll have it ready for you.
I love it. I had to kitchen ambush you one day and just come in with something and let you go to work. Cause
people do that to me. Yeah.
It's so great to be able to spend time with guys like you and women, you know, that are just artists, you know, just culinary artists. And I feel bad, for lack of a better way to say this, at times when you guys don't really get to really do what you do, you know, because you get roped into this menu and you're stuck with it for a while. I wish that every chef had the opportunity to be as creative and artistic as you guys get to be, because it's just not fair sometimes.
Well, that's up to, you know, and that's kind of where a lot of times these shows really help is they allow us that opportunity. But for me, I get that opportunity because I do a lot of charity events. I'll do a ton of different – I mean, I probably do at least two a month. where I get to go make either a small dish or a small bite, or, you know, we just did one where we made small plates for 200 people. And it's those kind of events that really can take you out of your usual day-to-day routine and allow you to do something else. So I always encourage young chefs, if you're getting burned out, do a couple charity events, donate your time, donate your ability, and really push yourself. The other thing is to connect with a local culinary school and do demos for students. You know, go do a demo of a dish that you don't do in your restaurant regularly, but you love making. So I'm very privileged in that 2 times a year I go to Mexico and do a couple dinners and demos for 7 days in exchange for a 7-day all-expense-paid trip to a beautiful resort in Cabo or in Loreto or in Nayarit. So I'm very honored I get to do that. I get to go to Vegas once a year for a nightclub and bar and do that. But those are things that I push to do because I wanted that ability to stretch my arms a little bit and, you know, stretch your brain. And really, charity events, best ofs, small things like that are really the best way to push yourself.
Oh, I agree, and we do a lot of those types of events. So what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong in what I heard, was if I get you and your wife an all-expense-paid trip to some place, you'll come do an event for us. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yep.
Fantastic.
That's how we do vacations, man.
I love it, and it's the best way to do it. All right, so I got another question to ask you, and then we're going to step into where you're at today, and that is this. What is that one technique that every home cook has got to master?
How to cook a chicken.
How to cook a chicken, all right?
How to properly roast a whole chicken, everybody should know. Everybody, at least one thing, and is how to roast chicken and how to cook vegetable correctly.
What's your definition of correctly cooked vegetables?
I'm glad you asked that. Escoffier once said, the test of a great cook is to make a carrot taste like a carrot. So being able to properly season your food, I firmly believe that any vegetable should have still some natural bite to it. It should be maybe 20% away from being raw. If they're soft, there's no point in them. They need to be close to raw, but have heat added to them to bring out the extraness of that flavor. And a big tip that I would give to, and this is something that I learned a while back, when you cook vegetables, you cook them first, then you season them. Going to give you an example. Is a lot of folks don't like eggplant because it gets dried out or it's boring or bland.
My hand is up.
Okay, so if you dice your eggplant, toss it with an olive oil, throw it in a 350 oven until you get a little bit of color to it, you're going to notice that it's not puffing out and it's not shrinking. All you've done is coat it with oil. The oil is a heat transmitter. That's it. When you take them out of the oven, while they're still warm, you're going to see a little bit of water on them, but not a lot. Season them then serve them. Add your salt, your little bit of pepper. Let them, after you toss it with that, let it sit for 5 minutes, then serve them. And you will be blown away by how good your vegetable is. And then one of the things that makes me the culinary, and there's a reason why that phrase has come around, is there's a scientific reason for why things work the way they do. If you toss your eggplant with salt or whatever, salt, let's just say salt, and then you throw it in your oven, the purpose of salt is to pull water out of product. It pulls the water to the top. in order to hydrate the salt, and then that's just what it does. I mean, look, you cure a salmon, what do? You pull all the water out of it.
Right.
So if you add, okay, so you have water on top of eggplant in a very hot environment, what happens to water in a hot environment? It evaporates. So you're pulling the water out of your eggplant into a hot environment where it evaporates. So you're drying it out.
Right.
Whereas if you take it out of the oven with just the oil, which is, again, it's just purely a heat transmitter. It's not really doing much of anything. It's just transferring the heat evenly around all the pieces.
Right.
Add your salt to it right then before you serve it. Salt pulls water out, correct?
So right.
The inner water, which is where your flavor molecules and your aroma molecules all are, as that comes to the top of your eggplant, so you eat it right there with that freshness of its waters on the top, you're going to taste a stronger flavor. It's going to taste and smell a hell of a lot better, and it's not going to be dried out.
Awesome wisdom. Great piece of advice. Thanks for sharing that. Oh, geez. Again, time is my enemy when it comes to you. So let's get back in time.
All right. Keep me on track.
Let's go back to Culinerty, because that's where we're at today. You got this great restaurant. I know it's great. It hadn't even opened yet, but you and I both know it's going to be rock solid.
It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be nuts, and I can't wait to get out there and get inside. Where did Culinerty come from? What was the start of that? I mean, take me from the oh, my God, this is it, to the truck, to where you are today. And I know we don't have a lot of time, so I want to really focus on where you're at.
I'll make you quick.
Do me good.
As you just heard, I like to go into a little bit of scientific diatribe behind things and science. I found, a few years, probably about 12, 13 years ago, I was getting burned out of hotels. I've been in hotels for 20 years and large scale restaurants and that. And I discovered on Food and Cooking by Harold McGee and started to learn that there is really truly science behind what we did. And as I studied the science behind food more, I was becoming a better cook by applying principles and scientific technique and scientific knowledge to my food. Example, the eggplant, or cooking squash, or cooking Brussels sprouts. And one of my friends, we were out drinking one night, and he says, dude, you are not just a culinary guy. You're like a Culinerty dude, And it stuck.
There you go.
And then I just embraced it, and I had Culinerty tattooed around my neck while before I was even teaching college. And the truck came about because I just wanted to cook again. I'm like, I just want to cook. I don't want to go in and review budgets and sign off on huge payrolls and go to meetings all day. I just want to cook. And a buddy of mine who I've known for quite some time had started a truck and said, hey, you should come check out this food truck. So I went and I was checking them out and watching them, and then I went and I spent a day on one. And I told my wife, I said, this is perfect. This is amazing. All we do is cook all day, and it's ours, and we don't really have to – we have nobody telling us what else we can and cannot do. So we bought have you seen the movie Chef?
Yes.
Okay. The first truck we bought looked like that first truck.
Okay.
It was that bad. So we got into there, and we actually started with a concept called Papa Dale's Drive-In Diner. And the idea was it was the 50s-style diner that was – it was motivated by It was truly motivated by my grandfather, and he's the one that really led me to do what I wanted to. And so we did it that in about 6 months in. We had some business partners that helped us buy the truck that were thieves and crooked and corrupt and horrible. And we dumped them and bought a new truck. And we felt that the brand had been tainted. And my designer, who designed all of the visuals and stuff, said, you should just embrace your Culinertiness and go with that theme. So we came up with the Culinerty Cruiser, and I would say it's the best thing we ever did, because people are like, well, what is it? It's like, it's just a love of food. You know, think of a nerd. You think of a nerd as somebody who is obsessed with, I'm looking at like 200 stacks of Star Wars postcards I have right now. It's who they're obsessed with like Star Wars or
right.
DC Comics or Marvel Comics or Star Trek, and they know things about it. Like, I used to remember, I tell people, look, you know, you may know the stats of your favorite football player, but I can tell you the number of James T. Kirk's cabin on the Enterprise. Like, that's the difference. Is like, I know things that, you know, that are just different. So that was the thing about food, is I'm a nerd for good food, but not just, you know, I did the fine dining. I've done all the molecular gastronomy. I've been there, done that, and I was like, I really wanted to create food for the average dude. You know, I want somebody that, you know, on a hamburger, to me, I swore I'd never do them, but as I started making them with different ingredients and different sauces and then applying scientific method to how we cook them, and all, it became people like, oh my God, these are the best burger I've ever tasted in my entire life. I was like, well, I guess we're going to continue with this. So that's the biggest thing, how that started. And then Culinarity is more of a culture of food love and understanding food than it is just a brand. It's going, okay, I just learned how to do this, so guess what you're going to see on the menu. And with the truck, it allowed me to do that. I learned how to make my own pastrami, which I'd never done before. I've made my own ham, which certain things, because of my career, I've never had an opportunity to do.
Right.
And you know, I'm constantly studying, but now I had a method to study, make something, and sell the results. And I don't have to do it in large batches. In a restaurant, you know, you may do 400 covers. You know, I do on the truck, I do 50 to 100. You know, true, they're by myself or with one other person helping me, but I mean, that's still a small number.
Right.
And that allowed me to focus on really making everything amazing. So, and I never really wanted to go brick and mortar. I never
wanted. But now you are.
Well, I think the thing too is I'll be 50 this year, and physically, you know, I've been in this industry for 33 years. Physically, I'm probably in the same level of breaking down as an 80-year-old. And the thing about the restaurant industry is, you know, we really don't have retirement plans. We really don't have future plans in a lot of these. So it became the next logical step. And we had trouble. We've been looking for 2 years to find a spot. But because my wife and I had been burned by a couple Paris partners, we didn't want to take on any partners. And the fact that we are sorry about that. The
water
heater came on. We didn't have money. We just don't have the money. You know, we've been running our own business for 7 years, highly successful, but at the same time, we don't have 100 grand to throw in somewhere. We don't have 50 grand to throw in. And we came across this location where we were able to move in, and we were able to put together a $20,000 budget to open this joint. So we came in, and all the equipment was here, everything's here. All we need to do is throw some paint on the walls, and we could go. But we decided to tear out a wall that showed was hiding an old brick wall, so backed ourselves up for a little while. Ooh, that brick wall's pretty. Ooh, it's going to take a week to fix it. Oh,
right.
2 weeks now.
and things, yeah, the best laid plans. So hard open June 3rd, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to happen.
Well, the plans right now is while I'm writing all of the recipes to open, I'm also building them into a cookbook.
Oh, that's I can't wait for that.
So I'm doing that, and then hopefully once after we get the restaurant open, the plan is to get cookbooks on the shelves, and our sauces and spices that we use that are proprietary on the shelves. So the plan is just to keep the ball rolling, just constantly, what's next, what can we do another, not to sit back. Within 6 months, you know, we'll have some profit to put somewhere, and we'll probably start shopping for location number two.
That's awesome. And we're going to do everything over here that we can to support you guys, because it's just there's so much that you guys are doing and have done and contributions that still need to be made on your behalf into the culinary world. And I am just so grateful, grateful, man, that you're there. And I know we're running out of time, and I hate it. God, I hate it. I got to get you back on.
I'm in a hard – I got nothing else to say. I was going to tell you a little bit of a story. When I said we never wanted to go brick and mortar, one of my cooks, we were having a – after – we do a lot of business at breweries. And we were having a couple beers at the brewery after service, and she goes, "Why don't you want to open a brick and mortar?" I said, "It's a lot of work and it's a lot of money." She goes, "But you know what? Your food is so damn good. You're cheating people out of not being able to have it."
She's right.
I was like, I never even thought of it that way, but she was so like, you're ripping people off. You're not letting people enjoy great food. They have to eat the other crap that's out there.
So, you know, she's so right, and that's the conversation that I've had with so many chefs on the branding side of what we do, and we talk about this. Man, that is your responsibility to get your art, to get what you were born with into the world, because nobody else is going to do it like you, and nobody's going to bring it out like you can. So I'm glad she did it, man, because, you know, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, if you ever need anything, call me, dude.
Dude, this has been, and I cannot wait till you guys get opened up, and we're going to do everything we can to support you on that and get some people out to your place. You guys going to be 7 days a week? What's your schedule going to run out there?
We're gonna grow slow. We're starting with five, breakfast and lunch, because we're near a downtown office area.
Right.
And then in July, expand it to Sunday brunch.
Okay.
And then the day after, then in August, depending on how things look, we may end up just expanding our hours.
So you're not going to do dinner seatings. You're just going to do breakfast and lunch for now?
Yeah.
Okay. And so evening times, are you going to be open 7 days a week or just five? Just Monday
just
through Friday?
Five.
Okay.
Just five.
And so the evenings, once a month, twice a month, you're going to do special tastings and things?
Yeah, we're going to do a couple special events twice a month. But, like, right now we're setting to where Tuesday night's going to be a game night.
Okay.
People can come out, play Magic, play Dungeons and Dragons, whatever card games they want to play. Have happy hour apps. We'll have, like, our fry dishes available. So that people can come to a place that they know that every Tuesday night they can go play games.
That's awesome.
We're all about the gamer community, so.
I know, man. It's part of being a culinary nerd. I got to ask you this.
Okay.
With the restaurant, when it opens and gets up and running, and you're putting the menus together and you're creating the cookbook, when's the cookbook going to be out? Do you know?
I have no idea.
You got a target date? No?
I'm going to shoot for July 1st, but, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
I should have it done sooner, because I have to write every single recipe that's being used for this menu. And this menu is a culmination of, well, a lifetime, but also 7 years of R&D on the little truck. So,
oh, yeah. You've got so much to get in.
And then
there's not just going to be one.
Well, Amazon does this wonderful. They'll print. They do books on demand printing for you now.
Yep.
You send them PDFs, and they'll just print it when somebody orders it. So I'm really feeling like that's going to be what's going to happen.
Well, I will say this, and I'm going to be on record with this. If you need any help with getting that done, you call me.
I will.
Because that's one of the things that we do, and we do, but that's another conversation for another day.
Sweet.
But if you need any help with that, man, I would be honored to be a part of that.
You got it. Done. We'll make that happen.
Covers. How many covers you got in the place?
Right now we see 50.
50. All right.
And we're building out a king's table that may expand that number. So we have, it's a small, like, shotgun style kind of restaurants, long and lean.
Right.
And we had one place that we were like, nothing worked right, booths or tables, we weren't liking. So we're going to build kind of like a king's table something around it, elevate it about a foot and a half off the ground, make the table kind of big and obnoxious.
Cause I like
it. We have some guests that are kind of obnoxious that we've loved for years. And the benefit is that we're not unknown, so it really helps that getting started.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be huge. You going to be in the restaurant every day?
Unless I'm out on the truck.
I was going to ask you, what's going to happen with the truck now? You just going to do special events, or you got somebody going to run it for you?
I'm actually going to keep doing it. I've got my plan, and what's looking and shaping up right now is I'll have a very tight crew in the restaurant from day one.
Right.
I do not want, and I do not want myself to be a hourly slot on the schedule. The plan is to get a good person in to lead. I have somebody, they're going to start on the truck with me in a couple weeks so they can start getting the feel and start getting the training down. And the goal is to keep the truck out a few nights a week. We still have weddings. I'm booked with weddings until May 2020. We may continue to do that. So that's just the plan, is just to keep it going.
Awesome. Where can people find you, man? Where's the website now?
Website is nerdytruck.com. Instagram, nerdytruck, nerdy_truck. Let's see, what else do I use? Instagram, Culinary Kitchen, and Instagram, Culinary K. That's my personal. I put so much food porn up on that. and then you can find us on Facebook at The Culinary Cruiser and Culinary Kitchen.
All right, we'll put all of that in the show notes. Dude, you've been a rock star. I love you, man. I just, you know, I follow you on all the socials, and you're just such an inspiration to a lot of folks out there. And I'm so grateful that with all the things you got going on, you chose to be with us today, man. That's just awesome.
I appreciate that, man.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We're going to support you out any way we can. And I'm dead serious about this cookbook, man. You need some help with that. You hit me up, because we're already set up and running. So
we will definitely talk very soon.
All right, brother. I'm going to let you get back to the kitchen, let you get back to putting some brick walls in place and
thanks, brother.
Cracking the jobs around there. Again, thanks so much for being on Kitchen Conquered, man. I'm looking forward to sharing this with everybody. You are a rock star. Thanks so much, Chef.
All right, man. Have a great day.
I'm working on that.
Take care.